Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 111. I'm Dave Bryan from Steelers Depot, and sitting in for David Todd once again on this Friday morning is Alex Kozora. Alex, happy Friday, and Skype is telling me that tomorrow is your birthday. That can't be true.
It is, but I think that I'm an old man now. I'm going to be 23, so the birthdays don't matter. They just remind you of your own mortality, I think. So happy birthday to me.
23. I can't even remember when I was 23.
Yeah, what were you doing at 23?
I might have been managing a Domino's pizza when I was 23.
Ooh.
My career has gone downhill.
Do you get free pizza at Domino's?
Oh yeah, hell yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to remember. It wasn't too long after that. I think I went in a little bit different direction, but needless to say, I don't even think the internets were around back then.
Maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, 23. The good thing, though, is we didn't have cell phones and we didn't have ways to kind of keep track of us. Always had that kind of stuff attached to us, especially that really paid off when I was a teenager in high school for sure. Happy birthday ahead of time to you. And folks, if listeners, feel free to reach out to Alex on Twitter and wish him a happy birthday as well, at Alex_Kozora. We're kind of entering that dead area right now, Alex, where there really isn't a lot to talk about unless, you know, some news kind of gets manufactured, on Twitter mostly, as we will see a lot of that as always. But a couple of things we wrote about quite a bit this week. One of them has to do with linebacker James Harrison, and he had a surprising, or what they like to call a random PEDS test, again earlier this week, and he attempted to film it much like he did his last random PEDS test, and the tester would not allow that to happen. And kind of long story short, you know, people should kind of already know what transpired there. He was put on the phone with a guy who works for handles the NFLPA testing from what I view as an independent third-party company. And he said in so many words that if James was to film that, it would be viewed as a positive test. James immediately got on the phone trying to get an answer from Damore Smith, the player, you know, representative for the NFLPA. What is his official title? I keep forgetting.
I just call him the union rep. He's the new Gene Upshaw, replaces his.
Yeah, and I don't think Damore Smith was able to get him an answer that he liked, and then come to find out a couple of days later, the NFL and really. There was a story, I think, in the Washington Post that kind of better clarified the NFL stance on this. It is illegal, or it is against the rules for players to film their testing. And I think a lot of that stems from them wanting to try to keep things kind of the process confidential so that ways won't be figured out how to circumvent it. And is that kind of what you got out of the whole thing?
I guess. I didn't read that Post article, so maybe I didn't see that rationale. I mean, I guess that makes sense. I mean, my issue is just if someone's, you know, I understand that, you know, the NFL can drug test you. That's fine. They can come into your home and drug test you. And I think it was at night, too, which is an odd time to do it. But, that's fine. That's what you sign up for in the NFL. But you should have the right as a player to film it for your own paper trail, for your own peace of mind, and so you can have video evidence should there ever be a dispute. And it's not like it's explicitly said in the CBA that you can't do this. What the CBA says is that, okay, we're going to have a drug policy, and we're going to figure out all the specifics of it a couple weeks from now. It literally says, like, weeks or several weeks later, we'll figure out the exact process. So whenever the CBA was agreed to, and of course the Steelers were the lone dissenters of the group, that process wasn't even known. So you're not even getting to look over that process or have that process debated with the union beforehand. So, you know, I usually understand the argument of you sign up for it, so you agreed to those terms. But in this case, they weren't explicit. So, hey, honestly, you know, frustrated me, and obviously it frustrated the heck out of James Harrison.
Let's see. Cindy Boren from is the one that wrote the article for The Washington Post. And in there she writes, there are, however, valid reasons for keeping drug testing, which was agreed upon by players in the league under the 2011 CBA and again in 2014, from being transparent. She goes on to write, one concern is that video of the process could be studied to find ways to manipulate test results. Someone could also try to look at the information or the numbers on the cups, or try to create their own cups. The Olympic doping scandal at the Olympics showed that supposedly tamper-proof bottles that are the standard for testing can be compromised. She goes on to quote, a player may not film a drug test. Both the league and NFLPA recognize that the collection protocols and procedures are designed to ensure the accuracy and identification of specimens to be tested, NFL spokesman Brian McCarthy said in a statement emailed to the Post. To maintain the integrity of the protocols and protect against possibility of manipulation of the process at the time or during future tests, the policy prohibits devices and other objects in the collection area or taking photographs or video of specific collections.
That is some grade A lawyer speak if I've ever heard it. You can manipulate it. You know, if someone really wants to manipulate it, you don't have to take a video of it. You get drug tested so many times, you can figure out the process. You could write it down. You can just, you know, tell a buddy. I get it, but I just doesn't pass the smell test for me.
Yeah, now obviously it's going to be hard for a player to visually memorize what a cup looks like and send that off to have it duplicated. Mm-hmm. I understand where this is going or where they're trying to go with this. I'm with you. I don't like it. But, and look, people are going to find a way. If they want to cheat, they're going to cheat,
mm-hmm.
you know. Should there be a better way for a player to document it, or should I don't know the best way to? I mean, look, you obviously kid, they don't want it videotaped. I understand why James his view on this is he just wanted to give kind of a behind the scenes more than anything of kind of what goes on. He thought it would be interesting, but now that he's been stopped, he obviously thinks, all right, what are you people trying to hide mm-hmm. there? Is this a big deal? Should it be something that the league looks at moving forward?
Probably not. It'll blow over. I'm sure the league has no desire to look into it or change the rules or deal with it. And if it is in the CBA, then it's going to be awfully difficult to try to change. Yeah, I don't know if there's a better way. You always want to see if your process can get better. I don't know if maybe every single drug test should have this, you know, a union rep somehow with them, someone from the union side to monitor the situation. That's just an idea. But I understand James Harrison's frustration. Someone comes into my home at night and I can't, you know, film in my own home. That's dicey.
And come to find out, the guy, because you remember James had pictures and all on Instagram of his last PED mm-hmm. Random test, and supposedly that ended up getting that fellow fired.
Right, and I also think that's why Harrison was mad, because he had filmed it before and no one told him that he couldn't, and now all of a sudden he couldn't. But how on a scale of 1 to 10, how scared was that drug rep when they come into James Harrison Harrison's house, Harrison has no shirt on, and he's angry? I would have just been like, yep, James, you do whatever you want, I'll get fired, that's a lot better than me trying to stare you down.
I don't know, somewhere in there flipping burgers looks a lot more
yeah,
appealing, right?
Yeah, James Harrison, when he's angry, you wouldn't like him when he's angry.
The thing is, you know, he already posted that picture. Heck, we even have it on our site, you know, a screen cap of that of the cup that he was asked to pee in. And have they had to change those cups since?
Yeah,
you know,
they saw Dave Bryan got us again.
Yeah, well, I mean, all it was a screen cap of what James put out there, you know. But are you telling me that they have actually changed the style of cup since then? Because, I mean, to me, anybody could probably take a look at what James posted there and send it off if they wanted to go through all that and get that thing copied. But anyway, it was something to kind of that kept us busy earlier in the week. And you know, anytime James Harrison is involved with something against the league, it's going to be a big story, and it of course was, but it seemed to die down. It's almost as quickly as it blew up there. Let's see what else has happened this week. The Steelers brought back a familiar face to the roster. They signed former seventh round draft pick David Johnson to a 1-year contract, and while we do not have the terms of that deal just yet, I'm willing to bet you some money that I would be putting into some slot machines at a Vegas casino this weekend that it was a minimum salary benefit contract for the minimum, and at most he received an $80,000 signing bonus. The key, and I wrote about this after the news kind of broke on it, the timing of this is kind of obvious from the standpoint that, being as how it happened after last, I think it was last Friday's deadline of what was it, the 12th or the 13th, that's the date that once free agents are signed after, they don't count towards the compensatory draft pick formula. I always was under the impression that date was like June 1st, but that's not actually the case. It seems to be in the middle of May. So that would be a reason in itself for the Steelers to wait to sign a veteran like David Johnson. On top of that, the rookie minicamp took place, of course, you know, the previous weekend, and with that, the Steelers had a couple of undrafted tight ends that gave them a chance to look at and kind of get a brief overview of players under contract. In signing David Johnson, they released David Reeves. Some people, I guess, got upset about that. Look, David Reeves was a very, very long shot to make this 53-man roster, and probably additionally a long shot to make the practice squad. In addition to that, bringing back a guy like David Johnson, because of the type player that he is, which is a tight end slash H-back slash fullback, really makes a lot of sense on a lot of levels. And we kind of hit on that, Alex, I think, when we talked on the last episode, talking about a guy that, look, Roosevelt Nix is obviously your starting fullback.
Right.
There's no question about that. Barring injury, he is going to be the skull crusher slash special teams contributor for the Steelers this year. He came out of nowhere last year, but he is what he is. He's solid at what he does right now. Having a guy like David Johnson on your roster now, especially now that you have lost Will Johnson during free agency, really makes this signing that much more appealing, because David Johnson really is just a more experienced version of Will Johnson.
Right, yeah. You need to make sure your numbers are good for training camp and going into the offseason. And as like you said, Dave, as we touched on last podcast, you know, the Steelers really only had one fullback. I had mentioned the idea maybe Stingley was going to make the conversion, but then we had heard from Teresa Varley that Stingley's dropped a ton of weight to kind of get down to more of a running back weight. He's sitting around 225 right now, so you kind of sat there and thought, well, who in the world's going to be the second fullback? And then, you know, seeing Johnson get signed makes all the sense in the world. You know, I liked what Johnson did in his first stint here. I mean, I thought he was a pretty good, you know, above-average blocker. And, I went back and looked at some of the old footage from his, you know, career in Pittsburgh and then some what he did last year in San Diego, and pretty much the same guy. I think he's better, you know, as a fullback, as a lead blocker through the hole than he is as an inline tight end, but he's been used in both ways. You know, he's a, you know, marginal athlete, maybe a little bit slightly more athletic than what I kind of remembered watching him run a couple routes in San Diego. Still has a little bit of, you know, juice to him. But, you know, he's I think for him to make the 53, which, of course, is no guarantee, he's going to have to beat out Matt Spaeth, the number three tight end spot.
Obviously, Will Johnson, more athletic, a better route runner, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. David Johnson's more of a lumber, if you will, and I think you put it best. So I think David Johnson, better all-around blocker than Will Johnson. The Will Johnson did make some strides, I thought, during his time in Pittsburgh. Minute, but they were strides. I mean, I remember several times, a few times out of the backfield, him just completely burying some people as a lead blocker here. So this signing makes sense on several levels, injury protection. And look, I mean, look at what the Steelers carried last year. They carried three what we'd like to call true tight ends. Kind of move tight ends, if you will, and a fullback in Roosevelt Nix, and an all-purpose guy in Will Johnson. It's not out of the question that they could do something similar to that this year, and as I've been careful to write several times since the season ended, I don't think Matt Spaeth is the lock everybody thinks he is or could be this year, and I think you're probably right. I think a guy like Will Johnson really could challenge a guy like Matt Spaeth, and this, of course, assumes that that Jesse James progresses the way you want him to this offseason, and then also assumes, you know, you can have another guy. You know, let's run down the tight end depth chart then. You know, you're talking about Green, Jesse James, and you know, possibly Matt Spaeth still.
Right.
And then you could carry a guy like David Johnson and Roosevelt Nix. Now, is there another guy that you would put in that mix?
Well, I mean, the other tight ends, and, you know, we have the Grimble kid, Xavier Grimble, who we've heard a couple, you know, off-season reports about, but we don't know anything about once you know, you start actually getting in the full pads. And then you have Jay Rome, who's the UDFA from Georgia, who I saw is just, you know, real, you know, below average in almost everything that he did. To the idea of them carrying David Johnson and Matt Spaeth the way that they did Will Johnson and Spaeth last year, I don't see that happening, because David Johnson's not going to give you enough on special teams. He doesn't run down kicks the way that Nix and Will Johnson did. He basically has served in that Spaeth role where he's a wing on field goals. He's part of the wedge on kick returns. But his special teams value is really no different than what Matt Spaeth has done. So, you know, the reason why, you know, Roosevelt Nix made the team, and the reason why they kept two fullbacks, was because you were getting some, you know, multi-phase work from Nix and Will Johnson. You're not going to get that from David Johnson. So I don't think they're going to keep, you know, both David Johnson and Roosevelt Nix and Matt Spaeth. I think it comes down to they're going to keep one of Matt Spaeth or David Johnson.
And let's be quite honest with each other right now. At this point in his career, Matt Spaeth's not a special teams demon either. Mm-hmm. Do you know off the top of your head what the amount of special team snaps that David Johnson played last year in San Diego?
It was about 120, but again, my quick look through was just he was playing field goal unit and some kick return work. He's not running down anything. It was very much what Spaeth is going to do in Pittsburgh.
All right, and whereas a guy like Will Johnson had a lot more activity on special teams.
Right, he was a multi-phase guy. He was running down kicks and punts, definitely on punts. I'm pretty sure he got at least rotated in on kicks and stuff. David Johnson won't do that, so that's the big difference. And again, remember, when the season started last year, was Will Johnson still the starter on offense? So it was Roosevelt Nix as that number two fullback, and of course he was a, you know, every phase kind of guy on special teams, aside from field goal work. So again, David Johnson's not going to do that, so that's why you're not going to keep both guys the way that you did last year. So it's Spaeth versus David Johnson. We know Spaeth is 33. He's got injury issues. I assume he's not going to be the number two tight end. I imagine even starting in camp, Jesse James is going to be the number two. Spaeth is the number three. You know, Spaeth does not have any additional special teams value either, so that's not going to give him a leg up. I think Johnson has more versatility because he can play fullback. He's gotten a little bit more work, you know, split out wide. You know, I think they might be relatively comparable blockers. I think Space, because he's a bigger guy and has more length, is still a little bit better. But I think you can do a little bit more with David Johnson, and he's just younger, fresher legs.
And Johnson, you know, as we pointed out, can give you more snaps. Not that they use a lot, you know, fullback a lot, but God forbid if you needed to have Johnson serve in that role, you most definitely could. Obviously, we expect the two tight end sets, a lot of them this year, to feature a guy like Jesse James and Ladarius Green, even though Ladarius really doesn't have a long history of serving as a end-of-the-line tight end. David Johnson has done that, as has Matt Spaeth, but Matt Spaeth is also a little bit more expensive, and if he's on the roster, of course, week one, you have to guarantee his salary for the year. So, you know, that's another thing to factor into this whole thing, too. In other words, I guess what we're kind of getting at is David Johnson is just not a camp body right now.
Right, and you know, I know the point you're making, but you know how I feel about that phrase. I absolutely abhor the phrase camp body. But yeah, I think Johnson has a path, and again, he's on the outside looking in. If camp started right now, and if you were making a 53-man roster today, I bet you Johnson wouldn't be on 95% of people's, and maybe not mine, maybe not yours, but there's a very clear, identifiable path, and it's passing up Matt Spaeth and bumping him off the roster, and that's certainly possible.
If you did keep three true tight ends and two, let's call them, you know, fullbacks, for lack of a better word right now, talking about Nixon and David Johnson, who could give you, you know, some snaps, obviously, as end-of-the-line players, David Johnson more so than Nix, more than likely. But with that said, if they were to keep three true tight ends, you would think that third would be a guy like Xavier Grimble, a guy who could give you more special teams contributions.
Yeah, probably, but I think Grimble's, of the 90 guys on the roster right now, I really think Grimble's the guy I know the least about, so maybe I need to just kind of get more acquainted with him. I mean, you've heard a couple of reports that he's a decent athlete, but I mean, he's a really complete unknown to me.
What are you expecting at this point? Are you expecting, if you were to lump fullbacks and tight ends all together, what total numbers are you looking at?
I think.
Are you looking at four?
Yeah, I think it's going to be three tight ends and Rosie Nix. I don't think it's going to be the way it was last year.
Interesting. They could definitely carve out a roster spot that way because, as we said, they carried three tight ends and basically. And one thing people forget, too, is Nix, you know, ended the season on IR with that foot injury. So definitely something to watch. To me, it would make sense, though, to have a multi-talented, you know, because, look, they don't use a fullback a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, we sure noticed when they didn't have one, right? A good
mm-hmm.
one.
Yeah.
God bless Will Johnson. He did a lot for this team, but he wasn't Roosevelt Nix last year. Let's put it to you that way.
Mm-hmm.
And you like to have those options available to you. And, of course, if you lost your starter mid-game, then, you know, you would have to kind of dump what you're, you know, dump a portion of what you like to do offensively without that.
Yeah.
So definitely something to watch here. You know, it's a cheap option with David Johnson. And we just spent 20 minutes mm-hmm. talking about a backup fullback tight end. But that's what we're kind of forced to do during mm-hmm. during the offseason here. It looks like Mike Mitchell is back. Lifting weights again with that injured shoulder 4 months after having shoulder surgery. That's good to see. The Steelers signed second-round draft pick Sean Davis to a 4-year contract this morning. That should leave Artie Burns, Javon Hargrave, and
Hawkins.
Gerald Hawkins as the three draft picks that remain unsigned. Usually the holdups in those kind of things is offset language and sometimes some what they call salary splits and stuff. It very usually, you know, with the slotting of these things, the signing bonus is really already set in stone with these guys. So it's really language of contract and certain things that really don't get written a lot about as far as the holdup on some of these guys. So we fully expect, you know, the rest of these draft picks to be under contract within, you know, the next 2 to 3 weeks more than likely here. What else do we have to talk about? Antonio Brown, of course, no longer on Dancing with the Stars. Well, I think he'll be on the finale coming up on Monday, but after that he should be able to participate in the Steelers offseason program or OTA practices that will get underway next week. So that's good. It also means I no longer have to write about Dancing with the Stars for at least a little while, one would hope. The thing is, and I wrote about this last night, and, you know, there's been a little, I think Kevin Colbert had a few things to say to Mike Florio a few weeks ago in an interview, and it goes back to what the Steelers may or may not do with Antonio Brown's contract. I think it's obvious, and Kevin Colbert has made this clear over the course of the last two off seasons, that they expect Antonio Brown to honor his contract, so thus, you know, they... usually when they only do extensions 2 or more years out, it's a quarterback. So we don't expect Antonio Brown to get an extension this offseason. So with that said, do you think that they're going to do anything at all with Antonio Brown's contract, i.e. paying him forward any of his 2017 money, much as they did last offseason with paying him forward 2016, some of 2016's money?
That would seem the most logical thing to do, and it would kind of be the best for both parties. You know, AB's going to get a bump in pay for this year, and he knows that he's going to cash in, next offseason. So I think that would appease both groups. I think AB's currently showing, you know, good faith. He was, after getting eliminated from Dancing with the Stars, he is tweeting and talking about how excited he was to get back to practice and to help Pittsburgh win. So he's not kind of in that pout or in that cloudy, is he going to report, is he going to be an issue kind of thing. So I think he's showing some good faith. I think it would be nice for the Steelers to hope return that favor and to make this a peaceful, you know, situation. So AB gets paid this year a little bit more, then he gets his long-term deal next offseason, and it's never a problem ever again.
I think they have to be careful here, and if you hate numbers, do not read the post that I wrote.
they went over my head a couple times.
Last night. But, you know, they could theoretically, they could allow AB to earn $11.25 million in 2016, and while he would still be severely underpaid as a top wide receiver, currently in the NFL, at least it would make him, put him in the top 10, make it a little bit more respectable, and they could do so by really and actually lowering. Barely lowering his cap charge in 2016 and slightly raising it, I think like $125,000 in 2017. Now, while my examples look great on paper and say, why wouldn't you do something like that? The thing is after my proposed restructure that would pay AB $11.25 million in 2016. You're looking at prorated bonus amounts sitting there in 2017 of over $9.5 million. So that money doesn't move columns. You know, once you prorate, it has to stay in its year, where it started at. So that would be, when you're talking about a new contract for AB next offseason, that's a starting point as far as his cap number is going to be in 2016. Now, obviously, a first year of a contract, depending on how it's structured, you could probably look at AB having $1 million base salary in 2017 as part of his new deal. And then, of course, you know, you would have the signing bonus, which would have to be broken down into whatever 4 or 5 years. And then if you're going to have any roster bonus on top of it, you got to keep in mind too that if AB's wanting to be the highest paid wide receiver next offseason, one would think, and this is barring anything happening between now, you know, with another player creeping up in there, it would have to be around $15.5 million average yearly value of new money. So, you know, you take your shoes off. You're looking at 4 year extension worth $62 million plus whatever's left over of his left owed to him on his last contract, the final year of his last contract next year. then that's your starting point. Then you got to figure out the percentage of guaranteed money that he wants. I guess it's a long way of me saying I'm not sure if I'm the Steelers if I want $9.5 million of prorated bonus money to have to navigate around next year on top of everything else. Now, I reached out to Joel Corey, my buddy Joel Corey, last night on Twitter when writing this up as well, too. And the Steelers really, if they wanted to, they could just pay him forward $5 million of 2017's money, not restructure anything, not restructure anything due to him this year, and that would result in his cap charge this year increasing by $2.5 million, and it would also only increase his 2017 cap number by $2.5 million. So you would accomplish basically the same thing, except you'd have to be able to stomach the increase, the $2.5 million increase in cap charge this year. And once again, you know, when you put these numbers on paper, and I know I'm boring a lot of you to death, but I absolutely love this part of contracts and all like that. I guess to make a long story short, I'm not convinced they're going to do anything with AB's contract this offseason, Alex. And if you would have made me bet, 8 months ago how this would have turned out, I would have said, I guarantee you they'd do something with AB's contract. But, I'm to the point now where I think we might end up not seeing them do anything.
I don't know. Yeah, that's obviously a lot of information. And I know you know this stuff better than anybody I know. So, you know, if that's what you think, it's hard for me to disagree. I just think, you know, that they did it last year. You're looking at, you know, small – raise in the cap for this year if you do that second option that you said, but you can offset that with a long-term deal for David DeCastro that might lower, you know, his cap hit this year, and you can basically cancel those two out. I don't know. I think that if they did it last year, I think it's smart to do it again this year. I think it's a sign of good faith while still, you know, being true to your values and principles. And if AB, you know, is going to come to work and not going to make an issue over it, we know so many players make an issue over their contract, I think it's a good sign of a good faith to AB.
Should they? Should they do this? Assuming they can, you know, assuming cap charge isn't an issue. Should they, out of good faith, do this?
I think so. I don't see a big reason why they shouldn't. I mean, they already did it last year, so it's not like you're reversing some sort of long-standing precedent that you would never, ever do this to a player, giving him kind of an advance on his allowance, you know? So, I think AB's been obviously so valuable, and he's been, you know, he signed the contract that he signed, but we all recognize that we can look outside of that for a second and realize how criminally underpaid he's been in relation to the production that he's put up. I think that it's the right thing to do for the guy, and he's been a fine, hard worker and hasn't skipped out on anything mandatory at all, and has, you know, gone to work and been so productive and valuable, and as a respected, you know, member in the community, and is with his teammates and stuff like that. So I think there's every reason why you should show that sign of good faith.
There's one commenter in that post that I wrote that really takes issue with me saying that AB is underpaid. He comes from the school of thought that every player is paid what it's fair pay if the player agreed to it, you know, with the contract.
I was skimming through that, and I was getting like a social studies lesson on economy and like Reaganomics and stuff. Yeah, that was a good time.
You know what it is? It's you get what you can get when you can get it.
Yeah.
In the NFL, because contracts are not really guaranteed if you think about it. If you underperform, you can get cut. So if you overperform, why wouldn't you try to get yourself more money? Because you are we're all day today, right?
If you want a guaranteed contract in the NFL, go play baseball, because you're not going to find it in the NFL. You're going to find it elsewhere.
Here's the thing. I think they should do it as a measure of good faith. But let's fast forward now. Let's assume they do something.
Okay.
With AB. And let's assume AB catches 115 balls for 1,700, 1,800 yards, in 2016. Another AB type season. Do you think the Steelers would make him the highest paid receiver in the league?
I think they'd have to. I don't think AB's going to take less than that. And whatever that number is, like you said, 4 years, $62 million, or I don't know what other receivers are up. Someone gets a contract in training camp, but yeah, I think you have to. How do you justify not doing so?
And boy, what a first that would be, right?
Yeah, but AB, I haven't seen many guys like him come through Pittsburgh, and there's been a lot of great guys, but what AB's dominance has done these last couple of years is pretty much unprecedented.
How much would it bother you? Let's see, he's about to turn, what, 28? Is that right?
Sounds something like this. You should say 27, 28. I'll look it up for you. Well, what you think?
I can't remember exactly. I think his birthday's coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah, it'll be 28, July 10th.
Okay, so he'll be 29 before the start of the 2017 season, right?
Yes.
It's impossible to answer, but how many good seasons do you think AB has left in him?
I think he's still got plenty. I mean, this is a guy that takes care of his body better than maybe anybody in the league. He works harder than maybe anybody else in the league. I mean, this guy puts in that time and effort to get his body right. I think he's got a pretty long shelf life for the position.
The thing also too, boy, the percentage of guaranteed money that will be the fun thing to watch, because if you look at some of these other receivers, top receivers around the league, probably your average around 40% guaranteed money, of the new contract, of the new money per se. The Steelers aren't going to want to be that high with a guy, with that age, and quite honestly, I could see them trying to get something done around 30-25% in new money. I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out the math here. I mean, if you're giving a guy, let's say, even $60 million, what's 40% of that?
I think maybe it does take a brain surgeon to figure this out. So. What is it, safe?
People don't like it when I use rocket surgeon.
Yeah, I saw that somebody asked that. Then you had the great answer. It's one who operates on rockets.
I guess they don't get my love to mix. What is it? Mixing metaphors? Is it? I love doing I stuff like
so
that.
So, what answer the math problem? What's that? 24 million. Does that sound right? Or am I maybe just get the old?
What percentage did
you
I?
Said
did
40% of 60.
Actually, I'm cheating. 24 million, yeah. Now, when you figure 24 million guaranteed, not all that's going to be signing bonus, but a good portion of it is.
Yeah.
You could give him a $4 million base salary, or you could $2 million base salary, $2 million roster bonus, and then 20 million over 5 years as a signing bonus. But 20 million over 5 years. As a signing, but I'm willing to bet the Steelers aren't going to want to do that. And on top of it, you got to remember, people say, Dave, how are you able to kind of get so close sometimes on these contracts as to figuring out, bases each year and all like that? Keep in mind that players are going to want a higher yearly average in year one, and then it slowly clicked down. Usually through 3 years of a player's new contract is normally going to work out to roughly what his average yearly new money is. So you got to stay on kind of that scale. So let's say AB earns $16 million in the first year of his contract, and let's say AB would earn $31 million by the second year of his contract, and that's how you kind of step these things down. So ideally, the Steelers would probably want to only give AB $16 million at signing. So that obviously would be a lot less than 40% of even $60 million. And I'm willing to bet AB's contract comes in a lot higher, or I shouldn't say a lot higher, about $4 or $5 million over that. Do you see any reason why he wouldn't get a new deal after this year?
No. The only reason I wouldn't see a deal get done is if Pittsburgh really just is not able or willing to pony up, the top receiver money for AB. But I just, what leverage does Pittsburgh have at that point? You know, AB's been a good soldier about it. He's been criminally underpaid for the last couple of years. You know, he didn't hold out or anything. If he doesn't get the money he wants, I mean, you know, theoretically he could go on the open market and just get all the money in the world. So I don't know what leverage Pittsburgh would have in that situation. They really just have to give what the true market value is going to be.
Does AB's true market value lower if he doesn't have as great of a season as he did last year?
I mean, I guess it would depend on why he didn't have as great of a season, but I think generally if he has anything still relatively close to an AB-type year where you still say this is, you know, at worst the top three receiver in the league, and there's a great argument to be made he's the best receiver in the league. No, I think, you know, we see Mohamed Sanu and Marvin Jones getting big money on the market. I think, you know, AB's such in the stratosphere above them that if he does anything close to an AB-type year, he's going to just get, you know, just tons of money in if he were to hit the open market.
AB will have more or less than the 136 receptions that he had last year.
I got to say more. I mean, it's really crazy to think about saying that it would be more, but no more Tavis Bryant. You know, let's assume Ben's going to play the whole year. There won't be a whole Mike Vick, you know, saga that tanks his numbers. I'm not sure what the – I think logically you think, well, just kind of regress to the mean. But, I mean, in terms of actually the way the roster is constructed right now and looking at some of the health, you know, aspects, I don't see how you can say AB's going to have less.
I am going to say he's going to have less.
How?
I think he will. I think as long as Le'Veon Bell stays healthy, I think that's going to help you, you know, a little bit more in the passing game. I also think a guy like Ladarius Green, I think you can get you know, him the 50 to 60 catches. Let's even say 50 catches for him, which would be extremely high based on his career so far. I think a guy like Wheaton can come close to, or really I'm expecting Wheaton to exceed the 44 catches that he had last year, especially without Bryant there. And I think a guy like Sammy Coates is going to come in and give you another 30 or 40 catches. I just don't think there's enough footballs to go around. I think, like it or not, I think it's going to eat into Antonio Brown's numbers, and I wouldn't be surprised if he comes in even under what he posted in 2014 as far as catches go, and that being 129. I see AB coming in at around 120 catches for around 1,600 yards in 2016.
Okay, I mean, yeah, I guess we'll see. I mean, either way, it's going to be a great year. But, I mean, Heath Miller caught 60 passes last year, and AB still put up the numbers. So there's still, you know, there was a lot of talent last year, too, and AB had no problem putting up the crazy numbers he did.
Let's see, and last year, let's see, Bryant had 50 catches, Wheaton had 44, Bell 24. I just think that this team might be able to run the ball a little bit more this year as well, too. I think defenses are going to also be, even though it's easier said than done, a lot of focus will be to make those other receivers beat you on the other side from Brown.
I think that's been the focus for a couple of years now, and defenses still haven't.
Right, that's why I said easier said than done.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, you just can't let this guy beat you. I mean, what he does after the catch, the amount of yardage that AB is able to register after the catch is just phenomenal.
Yeah, that yak, I mean, I don't know exactly what his, you know, yak number is, but it's got to be top. I think statistically it was like middle of the pack, but, I mean, you know, his yak threat is unreal.
Yeah, I mean, that's where he kills you in some of these big plays. I mean, because let's face it, he does have his share of catches 20 yards down the field, but it's probably not as high as what many people. I got those numbers somewhere. I know I do. Yeah. All right, now okay. I guess what I'm getting back to. Let's say he catches 120 balls, only 120 balls for 1,600 yards. still warrant that $15.5 million a season?
Yep, it doesn't change anything. I mean, he'd have to have a objectively bad year to hurt his market value at all. Because even if his numbers go down a little bit, it'll probably be explained by just natural regression to the mean, or just, you know, other players getting involved, like you said, or just not having the one odd gaudy 17 catch game like he had against, I think, Oakland. It was. It's not going to do anything to affect his value. He's still going to be the same talent that he was, you know, the last 2 years.
Let's see. Let's move on. Finish up talking a little bit more about Artie Burns. I've been posting all of his targets, and I'll have the final set of four games probably maybe on Saturday or Sunday, one of those two days, space them out here. Then I'll start getting to work on what I can find on Sean Davis. The thing when trying to match up these targets too with what Stats has down for Artie Burns, hopefully by now a lot of people have realized that even though Artie Burns is charged with, you know, completed pass, or as how Stats likes to call it, a burn, a lot of times it's in some cover three stuff with him playing off that stuff that you're logically going to give up a completed pass underneath. The big thing is, you know, are you tackling after the catch in situations such as that? Now, a few times we see some pass breakups where he's read it perfectly and really almost come up with an interception cover three or some, you know, cover six kind of things here with him. I still think, and I think Artie Burns is who we thought he was when looking at all these past targets. Someone asked me, well, how does he look when the ball isn't thrown his way? Well, here, once again, is the limitations on tape, you know, with not having the coach's film. Yeah, he looks good. I mean, it looks good, bump and run. Looks fine and off, but you know, you don't, a lot of times you're not able to see the full route and even for that much, you know, how he's defending the get off when you don't have the all 22 type tape. I think the biggest thing, Alex, when going back through all this tape again, that sticks out the most to me about Artie Burns is him consistently getting owned by receivers on the outside against the run.
Yeah.
And just getting manhandled. You know, with him trying to be a run defender, and it's easy to say, and it looks good in a tweet for someone to write to Dave and say, well, it's just something the Steelers coaching staff can improve upon. But that's time in, time out, we see usually what you are is what you are.
Yeah, I think that Burns can be the exception, though, because he is a junior. I mean, I think he's still growing maybe a little bit physically. And he's got the characteristics that you can look to in the molding a good, you know, someone who can play the run. He's got length. I think he is a physical guy. He doesn't shy away from contact in the least. I think he just needs to continue to get stronger. I think he's just, yeah, that lack of strength hurts him in so many different ways, whether it's him trying to bump and run or take on these stock blocks in the run game and things like that. But I don't think that, you know, that he can't get better at that and can't overcome that. I think he has a lot of the baseline tools to improve. And hey, Ross Cockrell looked just as bad on his college tape, and he did okay for Pittsburgh last year.
And even then, that's why he's probably not out there a lot.
Right, yeah. I mean, we remember last year, you know, we were asking why was Blake playing so many base sets and Cockrell and Nickel. I think part of that was, and this is, again, I know many people disagree with that, but they felt Blake was the better run defender than Cockrell.
And the thing with Artie Burns, though, boy, long arms and all, a lot of his tape's embarrassing.
Yeah, there's some bad tape, yeah. But again, 23-game starter, a junior, you know, hasn't been able to dedicate himself to football the whole time. He'll get better.
It can't get worse. I'll put it to you that way.
No, I know. He got beat up. Yeah, he definitely got beat up. But I think you'll teach him. And again, I know that's a catch-all, and that can annoy me sometimes too. I hear you. Every time we talk about an offensive line prospect, we say, well, give him the Munchak, and Munchak will fix him. Well, Munchak's great, but he doesn't have a magic wand. He can't just make everybody good and you know, absolve all their issues. But yeah, I think with Burns, would you agree that Burns is a physical player, or at least has a desire to be a physical player?
He has a aggressive, competitive mean streak to him.
And isn't that the big component of run defense? I mean, it's not the only thing, but if you do that, don't you give yourself a chance to become someone that can be an asset against the run?
it's that old want-to mechanism.
Right. And so I think you have that. I think he's got length, and I think he's going to get stronger. You know, like Gary Guillemot's going to be so critical to him. I think we talked about Carnell Lake. We talked about Mike Tomlin. Gary Guillemot, the strength and conditioning coach, is going to be huge to him year one, getting him on a right plan to get, you know, his bulk up a little bit and get stronger. You know, that's going to be his best friend, I think, year one.
I think that want-to is tough to measure outside of competitiveness and mean streak. Sometimes I think a player, and I think we've seen it in the past, a player can have a mean streak and a competitive streak, but not have the want-to when it comes to sticking the face in the fan.
But Burns has all that, right? I think he does. I think he's a physical guy. I don't think he shies away from it. I just don't think he's physically where he's at, needs to be.
I worry about the want-to.
Really?
Well, yeah, I when it comes to defending that run and getting off those stock blocks, that's where I worry the most, I think.
You don't think he has the desire to play the run?
I just think it's not in his top 10 things to do.
I don't know. I think he has it. I just think physically he just isn't quite there.
You think with those long arms, though, it would be a little bit easier for him, and hopefully it will be. But I guess what I'm getting back to is we're going back through all of this tape again. That's really the thing that sticks out the most to me with him.
I think the thing that he's got to deal with the most is playing in more space, because he was the boundary corner at Miami, and there's no boundary really in the NFL anymore. You know, the hash marks are a lot more narrow. So even if you're, you know, the boundary corner, you're still playing with a ton of space, and you can't just use your length to play inside, you know, leverage and ride the receiver to the sideline. I think that's going to be pretty foreign to him, and that's going to, I think, be one of his biggest adjustments.
Well, I think too, you know, the thing with him is interesting to see how, whether or not the Steelers, because he quote unquote played so much bump and run, according to them, which really, when you look at his tape, to me, it's very balanced. Last year's, what have you thought so far? I mean, it seems to me that he's playing off just as much as he's playing up.
Yeah, I think there was a mix, but I think we all know his best tape and his best you know, fit right now comes in that press man look.
So the thing is will you paint the barn red because you have the red paint with him, you know, or are you going to try to implement him? Are you going to let him see the field early if you haven't mastered the his off game?
Probably not. I mean, you just got to have trust in whatever, you know, you call. You can't put a guy out there and feel like you can only call certain coverages or do only, you know, a very limited amount of things with Artie Burns. Doesn't mean he has to be perfect, but you have to have a good level of trust in him. But to your point, yeah, I mean, the Pittsburghs can use him the way they use Ike Taylor. Just, you know, the Steelers will still cover three team, even though Ike Taylor was rolling up on guys and playing more bump and run and shadowing the number one receiver. So, you know, you want to marry the concept. You want to play to a player's strengths, because if you totally ignore that, then you set up a player to failure, and you don't develop him properly, and that's totally on you, not the player. But you also have to make sure he's able to play within the scheme and do some of the things you're going to ask him to do schematically. So there's a marriage there. There's a line you have to hit.
The tape, sometimes beauty is in the tape of the eye of the beholder of the tape watcher, right?
Okay.
What I'm saying is when you look at the final stats, when you look at the final breakdown of the tape that I'm doing as far as the targets go, you're going to see Burns targeted roughly, I think, around 47 to 49 times, something like that last year. You're also probably going to see 22 to 25 charged completions, but you're also going to see a good portion of those being off coverage as well, too. That's what I was getting to there.
And that's what I hate about, you know, I respect the work that places like Stats and Pro Football Focus will do, but, you know, they charge these guys for giving up the hitch in cover three. And it's like, well, what do you want the player to do in that situation? It's not his fault, clearly. So, you know, that's why whenever I do my charting for the Steelers, when I do my target stats for the defensive backs or just anyone on defense, I only, you know, allow a catch or give up or consider it a target if the player actually has a chance to compete on the football. I never charge a cornerback for giving up the bubble in cover three. I think that's a ridiculous way to go about it.
Exactly, and I agree. So I think if you go back and if you were to look and charge all these targets, these actual targets as targets, but take away actual burns, well, really you shouldn't charge a target if he had no chance to defend it in the first place. But I think you could get Artie Burns down to really only allowing, 15 completions?
Probably something like that, yeah.
That's not a lot. Now, he did allow the two touchdowns last year. He also, as far as missed broken tackles go, they have him down for four. But I think, as we just kind of pointed out, that doesn't tell the full story with him.
Mm-hmm.
As far as tackles go, I think he had a total of 35 total tackles. I don't remember how many. There are not a lot of run tackles in there. Let's just put it to you that way. A lot of those were kind of after the catch. I think he had 3 pass interference calls or holding calls against him last year, so that obviously wasn't bad. Look, I don't hate this pick. It's just, you know, I still think saw him more as a second-round talent shoved into the end of the first round.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my evaluation was similar. Again, I don't hate the pick either. I'm warming up to a little bit. It's just going to be interesting to see how they marry him into the Steelers scheme.
Not a good couple of days for some former Steelers players. Dree Archer, after being waived by the Jets, was claimed off waivers by the Buffalo Bills. He obviously or apparently has failed to report and was placed on the do not report list. We'll see how that plays out. Josh Scobie was cut loose by the New Orleans Saints. Seemed like somebody else was in there. Who am I missing?
Boykin, I think, was the one Matthew had written about, your friend.
Yeah, Boykin, and it looks like Boykin. People want to know, Alex, why do we write about players such as – why do we write extensively about players like David Johnson and Brandon Boykin right now during this time of year?
Well, there's not a whole lot else going on. We want to make sure we get some content out. But, you know, I think it's always interesting to look at it from every angle possible, especially with David Johnson. You know, this guy that got signed to the Steelers. Of course, you want to see how he fits into the team and what his skill set is like.
Yeah, people want to complain about you doing a film study on David Johnson. What else are we going to do?
Yeah, I don't know who you want to do a film study on. But
now, obviously, we're not going to do them on Brandon Boykin at this point, but you can bet your bottom dollar if there's somebody going to report about him visiting a team such as the Falcons, which he's scheduled to do next week. That's kind of worth throwing out there with a guy like him. Going back to the talk about Zach Mettenberger, who we had to kind of wrap up or talk about in last week's show, Alex. He did end up getting claimed. He ended up getting claimed by the San Diego Chargers, a guy that I kind of mentioned. You know, it wasn't hard to kind of connect the dots there. I mean, let's face it, Ken Wisenhunt was the head coach in Tennessee when Mettenberger was drafted. He's now the offensive coordinator with the San Diego Chargers. The Chargers could definitely use a body to see that they could possibly groom into becoming a number two or number three. So that made sense. Two other teams reportedly put in claims. I was a bit surprised by one of these teams. The Bengals and the Giants both put in claims for Mettenberger. The Bengals surprise you any?
A little bit, yeah. I guess maybe they had the hope that Mettenberger could be the number three, because certainly he's not going to beat out A.J. McCarron for the number two spot. But maybe the idea was maybe we get an offer we can't refuse for trading McCarron either this year or next year, and we have a guy in Mettenberger that we can develop behind Dalton.
Did you think the Steelers would show up on there?
I mean, I think what I said on Monday, that, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by it. So I didn't have a great feel either way to it. I'm not crushed by it by any means. But I thought there was a better-than-average chance that the Steelers were going to put in a claim.
Yeah, I thought so as well, too. And I was surprised only two other teams put in a claim on him. But, you know, let's face it, this guy, we're talking about a six-round draft pick here. You know, a guy that I really think probably should have gone a little bit higher than what he did, but here he is out of work already, looking for a job, and we'll see if he's able to last with the Chargers. Anything else to wrap up the show? Anything else worth talking about that we haven't hit on yet, Alex?
I'll just mention it real quick. The last UDFA scouting report that we did, this Newberry kid out of Florida State defensive end, I think he's kind of an interesting guy. Of the couple free agents that I've watched, I think he was probably the one that caught my attention the most. He's a versatile guy that played, you know, Florida State's, you know, base plays 4-3. They played a 30 front and some package football. He's kind of moved all over. You know, decent athlete. He's a played tight end for a year at Florida State. And he's a smart guy that gets his hands up. He had 6 pass breakups last year. That was second on Florida State. Jalen Ramsey had 10. So, you know, that's crazy for Newberry, who didn't even play 100% of the time. I think he's a guy that could try to make a little bit of noise as that last guy onto the roster along that defensive line.
He would have to definitely beat out a guy like LT Walton, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about the last guy on the boat. But I think he's got a chance to do it. And real quick, speaking of Ramsey, how about Jacksonville? My goodness, they're cursed.
Boy, they can't catch a break with these number ones, can they? Fowler last year, and although it doesn't sound like it's as serious with a guy like Ramsey, boy, you don't want a guy that relies on speed and cutting ability, such as a cornerback like Ramsey, already having to deal with a meniscus tear.
Yeah, and he had microfracture surgery in high school. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Yeah, I did
and
see that.
In the same knee.
That's a you don't like hearing that.
Yeah,
you know,
it's a lot of work.
Look,
on a young
you know, somebody has to draft these guys, right? I mean, if you went off entirely off medicals on every one of these guys, somebody's going to end up getting huge steals in the fourth round.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously you have to do your homework, but golly,
yeah.
You have to. Let me ask you this. Had he fallen down to the Steelers, they would have taken him, right?
Who, Jalen Ramsey?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what kind of bizarre world where that would happen, but sure.
I don't know. We've seen stranger stuff, though, right?
It's not even the fact that he had the microfracture. It's just, you know, you add another surgery to it, and you have to go in under the knife again on the same knee. You know, you worry about long-term health if that knee's going to hold up.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, somebody has – you can't run Chicken Little from every little thing,
right?
You know,
right.
When it comes to the health of some of these players. But, boy, you hate to see Jacksonville get bit 2 years in a row, and hopefully he – I saw one report said they'll know whether or not it's 4 to 6 weeks versus 4 to 6 months here in – you know, depending on how some of these initial tests work out, right?
Yeah, it depends on, I guess, on the severity of the terror, I guess, if it needs surgery or not. But hoping for the best for Jalen Ramsey.
All right, Alex, I'll turn you loose for the weekend. Happy birthday to you again this coming weekend. Folks, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Cazora at Alex_Cazora. You can email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com, if you want to chime in on something we said, didn't say. Folks, I've got a lot of feedback from people with diabetic dogs, and I appreciate all that. Toby's taken to the insulin quite well. Just got to get him regulated a little bit more, so I appreciate all the thoughts and prayers and info people have sent me on that as well. And let's see, if you want to donate, you can go to SteelersDepot.com, find the donate button in the upper right navigational bar. And until Monday, and hopefully we'll have more different stuff to talk about here. As always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.